Hariyan Balinam
Anuhariyan Balinam
Bhagavan Ishvaro Vyaya
Bhagavan Ishvaro Vyaya
Prajakalayate Kridan
Prajakalayate Kridan
Pashupalo Yata Pashun
Pashupalo Yata Pashun
Kalo Baliyan Balinam
Kalo Baliyan Balinam
Bhagavan Ishvaro Vyaya
Bhagavan Ishvaro Vyaya
Prajakalayate Kridan
Prajakalayate Kridan
Pashupalo Yata Pashun
Pashupalo Yata Pashun
Baliyan
Baliyan
More powerful
More powerful
Balinam
Balinam
Than the powerful
Bhagavan Ishvara,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Avyaya, inexhaustible. Praja,
mortal creatures.
Kalayate,
causes to move.
Kridan, playing. Pashupala,
Pashupala,
a herdsman. Yata,
as
Pashun,
domestic animals.
Translation and purpose by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. So I'll read from text 13. King Parikshit said, "Who was that person, O Brahmana? To which family did he belong? And what were his powers? Why did that destroyer of the barbarian lie down to sleep in the cave? And whose son was he?" Sukadeva Goswami said, "Muchakunda was the name of this great personality, who was born in the Ikshwaku dynasty as the son of Mandata. He was devoted to Brahminical culture and always true to his vow in battle. Begged by Indra and the other demigods to help protect them, when they were terrorized by the demons, Muchakunda defended them for a long time. When the demigods obtained Kartikeya as their general, they told Muchakunda, 'O king, you may now give up your troublesome duty of guarding us. Abandoning an unopposed kingdom in the world of men, O valiant one, you neglected all your personal desires while engaged in protecting us. The children, queens, relatives, ministers, advisors, and subjects who were your contemporaries are no longer alive. They have all been swept away by time.'" Now, text 19. "Inexhaustible time, stronger than the strong, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Like a herdsman moving his animals along, he moves mortal creatures as his pastime." Translation responsibly. Inexhaustible time. Stronger than the strong.
Stronger than the strong.
Is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself.
Is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself.
Like a herdsman.
Like a herdsman.
Moving his animals along.
Moving his animals along.
He moves mortal creatures.
He moves mortal creatures.
As his pastime. Purport. The universe is created to gradually rectify the contaminated souls trying to exploit material nature. The Lord moves the conditioned souls along according to their karma, through the various stages of spiritual rectification. Thus the Lord is like a herdsman. The word Pashupala literally means protector of animals, who moves the creatures under his protection to various pastures and watering spots in order to protect them and sustain them. A further analogy is that of a doctor who moves the patient under his care to various areas of a hospital for diverse kinds of examination and treatment. Similarly, the Lord brings us through the network of material existence in a gradual cleansing process, so that we can enjoy our eternal life of bliss and knowledge as his enlightened associates. Thus all of Muchakunda's relatives, friends and co-workers had long ago been swept away by the force of time, which of course is Krishna himself. Omagyan Timanandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhi Evacha Titanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Guru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare. So in the Bhagavad Gita it was mentioned there are five in the introduction. Srila Prabhupada mentions there are five subject matters in the Bhagavad Gita. What are those five? You sit on this side. What are the five subject matters which are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita?
Kala.
Ishvara.
Karma.
Prakriti.
Jiva.
And the Jiva. Like that. So first of all there is Ishvara, which means God himself. Without God there is nothing. So God is the origin of everything. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchid Ananda Vigraha Anadya Adya Govinda Sava Karana Karanam. This means that Krishna is the origin of everything else, but he himself does not have an origin. Sometimes people say, then where does God come from? But that's not, it's not a logical statement by definition, because God by definition is without origin. By definition, Lord Brahma says, Anadya Adya, he is the origin of everything, yet there is no origin to him. So if someone is saying, then where does God come from? Then they're not understanding theology very well. They don't understand the philosophy of God very well. You can't make a statement like this. Just like, you know, they write books in the 1970s. One book came out which was all about that God was dead. He passed away. You know, he got very old. You know, he's been around for like 10 million years and, you know, he's passed on. So now we see that there is chaos in the world because there is no supreme controller anymore. And then they wrote other books, and some of the other books said that he's still there, but he's lost control of everything. He doesn't have full control anymore. So because he doesn't have full control, that's why the world is in chaos. That's why everyone is, all the wars are there and all the famines there and all the floods, because he's too old now. And when you're old, it's very difficult to manage everything like that. So that's another theory that came out. So people who write these kind of things, they really do not have very much idea at all about the philosophy of God. They don't have any deep understanding about God, because God by definition is without an origin and he is the supreme controller. Lord Brahma says Ishvara Parama Krishna Param Ishvara means the supreme controller. He is all powerful. He can reconcile anything. Just like one philosopher, he argued, can God create a mountain which he cannot lift? And he said that if God cannot create a mountain which he cannot lift, then he's not God. This was his argument. You know, because basically they're atheists. And someone who is a demoniac personality or an atheist, he'll do anything to try to trick or trip up God. You know, he thinks by, this is how powerful Maya is, the conditioned souls think they can outwit Krishna. Right? That's how bewildered everyone becomes. So then they presented this argument to Srila Prabhupada and they said, can God create a mountain which he cannot lift? And what did Prabhupada say?
Yes.
He said yes. Yes, he said he can create a mountain which he can't lift, and then he'll lift it. Alright, just to reconcile the contradictions, because Krishna can reconcile contradictions. Krishna can anything which seems apparently contradictory, Krishna can reconcile that. Just like Mother Yashoda, she approached Krishna and she said, "Have you been eating dirt?" So then Krishna said, "No, I've not been eating dirt." And then Mother Yashoda said, "Open your mouth and let me see." So Krishna opened his mouth, and Mother Yashoda looked into his mouth, and what did she see? Right? She saw the universe inside of it. She saw planets orbiting like that. She saw the entire cosmos, the entire solar system. She saw Earth, and she saw Vrindavan, and she saw herself standing there looking into Krishna's mouth. Right? And she was just completely, you know, her head just was completely, you know, what am I seeing? Bewildered. Right? So Krishna was standing there in front of her, right, a little boy standing there in front of her, and yet she was seeing herself deep inside that little boy, right, in a huge vast space, looking into his mouth. This is contradictory. How can you be outside of someone and also be inside the person at the same time? Krishna reconciles it. For him, it's not even a problem. So Mother Yashoda, she said to Krishna, "Just close your mouth and don't eat dirt anymore." No? Because what else could she say? She was totally bewildered. And she became covered by Yoga Maya again. And she just became absorbed in her parental vatsalya rasa towards Krishna, her maternal affection. And then she just forgot the whole thing virtually. But this is the potency of God. This is his supreme position. He is the supreme Lord. And he can reconcile any contradiction. Anything which seems contradictory, Krishna can reconcile that. He is all powerful. So this is the first subject matter of the Bhagavad Gita. Then the next subject matter of the Bhagavad Gita is the jiva. The jivas are mentioned within the Bhagavad Gita to be of two types. Right, those who are Nitya Buddha and those who are Nitya Siddha. Right, those who are eternally liberated and those who are eternally conditioned. Of course, no soul is eternally conditioned, in one sense. But we are called Nitya Buddha because we have been within this material existence for such a long time now. Prabhupada says, from time immemorial, you practically can't trace out when we got here. We've been here for so long now. And we've been in so many different species of life and so many conditions of life on the samsara chakra. So it means that the 8,400,000 species of life, we've rotated all the way through them, maybe multiple times. So that is our condition within the material world. We are nitya, but virtually eternally conditioned. But Krishna teaches there is another category of jivas who are eternally liberated. And actually it says that a very small percentage of the jivas actually fall down from the spiritual world. So we can imagine how many jivas there must be in the spiritual world. Because if you went out onto the nature strip, onto the medium strip, outside there in Dang Street, between Mill Street and Kerford Road, you go out there, Ram, go out there now, and count how many blades of grass there are on that medium strip in between Kerford Road and like that. Go out and count and then come back and tell us how many of that. Right? You'll come back after lunch. Right? Okay, you come back tomorrow. Right? It'll be a long time. Right? How many are out there? We probably can't even count. There's so many out there. And that's just one tiny little speck of the material world, the material creation. The material creation, there are unlimited universes coming from the pores of Mahavishnu. And how many jivas are in those, in all those universes, practically trillions and billions and millions. And yet, most of the jivas never leave the spiritual world. So try to conceive of how many jivas there are in creation. How powerful is Krishna? How powerful is God that he can create so many living entities? Right? And how powerful is Krishna that he can remember everyone's name? That's impressive. Just like you try to remember everyone's name in Melbourne. Right? How many people in Melbourne?
5 million.
Right? So imagine you try to remember 5 million, you haven't got any chance whatsoever. Krishna remembers everyone's name in creation. Right? That's his potency. Right? Inconceivable potency. So there are the Nitya Siddhas, there are the Nitya Buddha Jivas, these are mentioned. Then there is the Prakriti. The Prakriti is also described to be of two kinds. There is the Para Prakriti and the Apara Prakriti. Krishna says in the final six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, he analyzes these two types of natures. He said there's a superior energy and an inferior energy. The inferior energy is the material energy. Right? This material energy which we are conditioned by in this material world, this is inferior. And then there is the spiritual energy which is superior. Right? Now what is this spiritual energy constituted of? What is this composed of? What is it made of?
Sat.
Sat?
Chit.
And? Ananda. Eternality, knowledge, and bliss. But the material energy is exactly the opposite. It is not sat, it is asat. Right? Which means it is not eternal, it is temporary. And it is not chit, it is achit. Which means the spiritual energy is chit, which means cognizant. Or it means it is conscious or aware. It's described in the Brahma Samhita, chintamani. Chintamani. What does mani mean? A jewel. Right? Chinta means?
Conscious.
So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, thought conscious. So even the jewels in the spiritual world, because in the spiritual world there's not dirt on the ground, right? In the spiritual world there are jewels all over the ground, and each one of those jewels is conscious. It is a living entity, right? So therefore it is called chintamani, right? So this in the spiritual world everything is conscious, everything is alive, everything is aware, right? Everything has life, right? But in the material world everything is achit. Right? All the matter is achit, it is unconscious. There's no consciousness there. It is an inferior energy. Right? That is the difference. So in the spiritual world it's called chit, in the material world it's called achit. And in the spiritual world everything is full of ananda. Ananda means unlimited bliss. Right? Everything is experiencing at every moment, every living entity in the spiritual world, all the little jewels on the ground in the spiritual world, every single individual soul is experiencing unlimited bliss in the spiritual world. Where in the material world, it is exactly the opposite. It is called Nira Ananda, which means?
No Ananda.
No Ananda. Or? Suffering. Right? It's exactly the opposite. Basically, what we experience in this material world is suffering. Basically. Right? Now the illusion of Maya is so powerful that you think you are enjoying while you're suffering. You think you are enjoying. And especially the potency of Maya is that when you are young, right, in whichever species of life you're in, when you're young, you will feel that you are enjoying because you have facility to enjoy. But as soon as you begin to age, or as soon as you get disease, then you experience the real reality of the material world. It is basically suffering. So you'll see as soon as someone becomes old, you can't enjoy anymore. Prabhupada said once you get past 50, he said basically sense gratification becomes like reduced. Like that. It goes down to, Prabhupada says it goes down to like nil. Right? It goes that you don't have any facility. And therefore you see old people, they dress up in young person's clothes and they walk around on the beaches and everything, and they're still trying to enjoy, they have all that desire to enjoy, but they have no facility anymore. Right? It's ridiculous. Right? So this is the nature of the material world. It is a place of suffering, primarily. Even though we think it is a place of enjoyment, but primarily it is suffering. Just like this material body, you can derive a certain amount of enjoyment out of this material body. But you can derive far more suffering from this material body. And we should be always aware of that that fact. Because as long as we're deriving some enjoyment from the material body, then we think, oh, the material body is good. It's a good deal and it's something that we can exploit. But the reality is that you actually are suffering in this material body. Right? And this is suffering far surpasses the enjoyment. Right? And we should remember that, right, as devotees, not become bewildered by the material energy, thinking that we will enjoy more than suffer. So then, there is Ishwara, there is Jiva, There is Prakriti, and then what is the next one?
Kala.
Kala, yeah, and then Karma, like that. So Karma is mentioned in, Prabhupada mentions in the introduction to the Gita. The Karma is the only item of the five which is changeable. The others are constant. Prakriti always exists. The Jivas always exist. The Supreme Lord always exists. The time element always exists. But the karma of the living entities does not always exist. The karma is something which is temporary. Every piece of karma that we have, either good or bad, is just temporary. And this is also something that the Jivas become bewildered by in the material world. When the karma is good, in other words, when the surf is up, right, everyone is thinking, yes, let us enjoy. But devotees are more sober than that, because devotees have Divya Jnana, or transcendental knowledge. So therefore the devotees understand that actually this enjoyment or this facility that I'm enjoying at this point in time in the material world will pass. Right? It is not an eternal situation. It's not something that I'll keep enjoying. Right? I may be enjoying right now. Right? I may have some healthy body, right, or some beautiful features, or I may have some wealth, or I may have some position, or I may have some good birth, like that. But all those things are just something you've been given for a period of time. And when your karma dwindles, when the reaction dwindles, then all these things will pass on in due course of time. And similarly, all the suffering that we have in the material world, that will just pass in due course of time. Right? We suffer, and we think, you know, let this suffering finish. Right? I can't tolerate this suffering. Let it finish as quickly as possible. But one who has knowledge, he understands the suffering will automatically go away in due course of time. Just like sometimes a very difficult situation just falls upon us in our life. You know, we don't go looking for distress. Right? None of us go looking for a difficult situation or a distressful situation. But sometimes it just comes. Suddenly a circumstance just evolves in our life and suddenly we're caught up in it and we're suffering. And there's nothing we can do about it. It's our previous karma. But one who has transcendental knowledge, he understands that all this will pass in due course of time. It's not going to last forever and ever and ever. It's just the situation in this material world. So these four items are the four which we have mentioned so far: the jiva, the prakriti, the ishwara, the karma. And now it has been mentioned here in the Bhagavatam in these particular verses, the fifth item is kala, time, the time element. The time element is probably far more significant and important than we all realize. We don't realize the influence of time or the potency of time or the power of time. You know, we probably don't have enough understanding of how it works or its place or its effect on us. Right? But the time element is extremely powerful. And you'll see in the Bhagavatam, in different places, like in the teachings of Bhishma, when Yudhishthira goes to Bhishma in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, and you see that he asks for instructions from Bhishma at the time of Bhishma passing away from this world, it is said that when you go to someone when they're about to pass away from this world, and if that person is very advanced spiritually, then you will get very valuable spiritual instructions at that time, right? Because the person at that time, he will speak the essence of his realizations at that time. Right? You'll see, if you read in the Raya Vishnu, and you see Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, in his final few days before he left this world, he gave amazing instructions. Right? Very potent, very powerful instructions. Right? And same as Srila Prabhupada. If you read the Lilamrita, or you read TKG's diary, or if you read one of these books about Prabhupada's final pastimes and the instructions, and the things that Prabhupada was doing and saying at the very end of his life, these are essential teachings. Right? These are the most important teachings, like that. This is the person giving his most valuable realizations at this point in time. So Yudhishthira went to Bhishma right at the end, when Bhishma was just about to pass away from this world. And Bhishma, said to Yudhishthira, basically, that all of what you have gone through, you had to go through so much tribulation, yourself and all the Pandavas, you brothers, right? And you were good souls. You did not deserve to go through anything that you went through, right? Because you were actually devotees of the Lord, right? And you were faultless. Everything which was done to you was not your fault, right? It was not because of any previous reactions or anything like that. But Bhishma says to the Pandavas, he says to Yudhishthira, but this is the nature of time. The nature of time in this material world is that everyone will be forced by fate or by destiny to go through things which are beyond their control. And that is the nature of time. It is irreversible, irrepressible. Right? It is Krishna, actually. It is Krishna's potency, his Kala Shakti. When Krishna glances at the material energy, in the beginning of creation, when Krishna first looks at the pradhan, or the unmanifested material energy, we're just beginning to study this now in the Bhakti Vaibhav, in our course in the third canto. We're just about to begin to study the creation and how Mahavishnu creates the material energy. Right? It's extremely intricate, the description of the creation, extremely interesting how the whole material creation takes place. And the material creation only begins with the time factor. Without the time factor, the material world cannot function. It doesn't do anything. The material world is just, as we said, it's just inert matter. But as soon as the time factor is glanced onto the material energy, then the material energy begins to move, it goes into motion. And once that motion begins, the jivas who are within the material world, right, and they have their material desires, and they're attached to the modes of material nature, right? Certain jivas are very attached to the mode of goodness. Certain jivas are very attached to the mode of ignorance. Certain jivas are very attached to the mode of passion. Then, according to their attachments and according to their desires, the time factor just picks them up and begins to move them. And then according to how they respond to all the circumstances that come in their material sojourn or their material travels, then they begin to create karma within this material world, like that. So now Bhishma instructs Yudhishthira. He says that time is very powerful. Right? It is more powerful than us. And we try many times. We try not to get affected by time, or we try not to get affected by the effects of time. It means that we try to avoid certain situations which are brought to us. But as is mentioned here in the purport, the Lord moves the conditioned souls along according to their karma through the various stages of spiritual rectification. So it's interesting because for a devotee, the situation is totally different than for a non-devotee. Right? For a non-devotee, he's just being moved by the force of his karma, his previous pious and impious activities. But for a devotee, it is actually the Lord himself who is moving us. Right? It's not just the material energy. It is not just Durga or the three modes of material nature, which are just moving the devotees. It is actually the Lord himself who is directly arranging all the circumstances in our life. Right? And it's interesting because if a devotee begins to see in that way, that it's actually the Lord who is arranging every single circumstance which I'm going through in my life, right? Then it's a great relief for that devotee's consciousness. Because that devotee can then accept this is the Lord's will that I go through these particular situations I'm going through. So we go through a particular situation, and if we understand this is Krishna's will, then for a devotee, automatically the devotee becomes introverted and he thinks, what is it that Krishna wants me to learn in this particular situation? What is it that Krishna wants me to understand? Right? Why has he arranged this for me? Right? Because quite often we go through things because we're in the material world. You know, we're not in the spiritual world. We are in the material world. We're in the material energy. Then we go through things which are quite often unpleasant. Right? In the spiritual world, there's nothing unpleasant. Right? And we should desire to go back there because in the spiritual world, it's far superior. Right? It's just complete bliss. Right? Even the separation from Krishna is bliss. There's no suffering in the spiritual world. But in the material world, we go through many things in our life which are not very pleasant. Right? But then we understand, obviously this is Krishna doing this to me for a particular reason. Why is he doing this to me? Because he wants to give me a particular realization. He wants me to come closer to him. He wants me to surrender more to him. He wants me to become more detached from the material energy. So that's how a devotee thinks. Like that. So we see that Krishna has directly got his hand in our life. It is not that everything is just bound by the material energy for the devotee. And Krishna uses our previous karma in order to rectify us. Right? And that's how super intelligent Krishna is. Because we have karmic reactions coming from our previous lifetimes. Right? Just like we have this particular body that we're in right now because of our previous lifetimes. Right? We have a particular body. You know, we have a male body or a female body. We have an Indian body or a European body. You know, we have a particular body. We have a particular mind. We have a particular psychophysical makeup. And this is all because of our previous karma. Because of what we did previously, we got this. And then within this body and within this mind, we have particular desires that were cultivated in our previous lifetimes. Right? So if those, with that body and that mind and those desires, then Krishna, he goes through and he uses that situation which we have, right, in order to purify us of our material contamination, our material desires. So Krishna takes whatever you have, which is already there, but he uses it in such a way, not just to give you material reactions, but in order to give you spiritual realizations. And a devotee, he understands this is how Krishna is reacting. He surrenders to Krishna's will. It's not that he tries to fight against Krishna's will. Just like we're reading in the Bhagavatam, Uddhava has just been explaining to Vidura in the beginning of the third canto. He said that the Yadu dynasty had a fratricidal war in order to remove themselves from the earth. Right? Or Krishna arranged a war between the members of the Yadu dynasty so that they could be removed from the earth. So normally you don't like to fight with your relatives. Right? No one likes to fight with their relatives. I mean, you know, you have some fun. You pick on your brothers and sisters, but it's not, you know, you don't like to have real animosity with your relatives. And what to speak of having to kill them? You know, to actually fight with them and kill them, you know, that's it's like an unthinkable circumstance. But Krishna arranged that for that to take place between the Yadu dynasty. Right? And normally they would not be inclined to do that towards each other. That would be the last thing they would do to each other. But they understood this was Krishna's will. They understood that was Krishna's desire. Krishna wanted to remove them from the earth. And they understood because they're pure devotees. They're very advanced personalities. They're extremely intelligent personalities. And they understood this was the Lord's desire. So they didn't try to fight against his desire, but rather they surrendered to his will. And by surrendering to his will, they fulfilled his mission. They fulfilled his desire. So similarly, devotees, we understand when the time factor is acting upon us, then we understand this is Krishna's will. This is Krishna's desire. And all the circumstances that come up in our life is simply Krishna's desire to rectify our deviant mentality of rebelling against him since we came into this material world. In this verse, it is explained that Krishna is like a herdsman who is herding the animals, like that. So the herdsman, he has to herd the animals. He has to keep them under control. Just like if you've ever worked on a farm, just like my great uncle, he had a big sheep farm up near the Grampians. And when we were kids, we used to go up there on holidays. And we'd get the truck, and he had a huge farm. And we'd drive around and try to herd the sheep. You know, keep all the sheep under control. It's very difficult to keep all the sheep, you know, under control, all the animals under control. So Krishna, it's explained here, that the jivas are like animals. Even in this material, even in this human form of life, it's described in the Vedas that the jivas are dvipada pashu. Right? In the Vedas it describes that the human form of life is just like two-legged animal. Right? And we see the people, they're just like two-legged animal. Right? Just like animal. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. But they have two legs. They stand upright. Instead of walking around on four legs like most of the animals, they stand upright. So Krishna has to control all these animals and bring them under control. And actually, he is controlling every single one of them. Even though they think they are independent and completely having their own independence, everyone thinks, yes, I've done it my way. Just like Frank Sinatra, who died a few years ago, who sung that very famous song, I Did It My Way. Right? Stood there very boldly in front of the whole world. I did it my way. Right? Very big false ego. Right? I did it my way. Right? No one else had control like that. And then now he is dead. Right? Why is he dead? Because he was under control of Krishna, of Krishna's energy, of the kala, the time factor, right, and the prakriti, the material energy. So everyone is brought under subordination by Krishna, even though the jivas think they are independent, but factually they're under control. And for the devotees, the Lord is our herdsman, which means the Lord is our shepherd. Just like in the Bible, this is how they describe Krishna, this is how they describe God in the Bible. He is our shepherd. He is the one who is guiding us, guiding the flock, right, keeping us all on the right path. And you'll see that when we're trying to go back to Godhead, when we're trying to make spiritual advancement, sometimes we become attracted by Maya. Right? Does that happen to any of us? Once or twice, like that. Sometimes we become attracted by things that we should not be attracted to. So then what does Krishna do? He's the herdsman. He's looking after the flock. So then as soon as we begin to deviate, what does the herdsman do? He puts out his stick and he taps the stray animal. He traps it. He says, go back, go back. Stay on the path. Stay with the flock. Keep going forward. So this is how Krishna treats everyone. So when we start to go off, then Krishna begins to give us a tap. Right? And if the animal is particularly rebellious, or if he's particularly not surrendering to the will of the herdsman, then may have to give him a strong whack in order to keep him under control. So sometimes Krishna will do that. And we see with devotees who sometimes leave the movement, sometimes devotees, they leave Krishna consciousness. They give up their sadhana. They stop chanting their rounds. There's like some of my good friends who I used to be in the Brahmachari ashram with many years ago. They stopped practicing their sadhana. They stopped chanting their rounds. Some of them started taking intoxication and things like that. They started doing different things. And then I've kept in contact with them over the years. And then they all say the same thing, right? That Krishna lets them go for a little bit. He lets them go for a few years, like, you know, wander off. It's like these sheep or the animals, they wander off for a few years. And then one day they just get a big crack, right? A big hit. It just comes out of nowhere. And bang, they wake up like that. And then they understand that Krishna has not left them. Krishna never leaves the devotees. It actually says, there's one shloka in the Vedas, it says that for one who once sincerely chants the name of Lord Ram, Lord Ram will never let that living entity out of his sight ever again. Right? So even if the devotees, if they leave voluntarily, if they leave the flock, if they leave the shelter of Krishna, if they leave the shelter of the herd, and they leave the shelter of the shepherd of Krishna, Krishna never lets the devotees go. They're always devotees, they're not non-devotees. Even if they begin acting like non-devotees, they start taking intoxication and engaging in material activities, but they're not non-devotees, they're devotees. And Krishna always remembers them, he never forgets, and he's looking at them constantly. Every moment he's watching them. And then when the time's right, when Krishna desires, then he brings them back. And how does he bring them back? He gives them a big hit, like that. Sometimes if the animal is very rebellious, then Krishna, then you have to hit it. Like you have to really chastise like that. So that's what Krishna does. So we should try to be good animals. We should try to be good sheep. We should not give the Lord trouble. We should not give the devotees trouble. We should not give the guru trouble. Right? That is not the responsibility of the devotees. We should not cause trouble for Krishna and Krishna's devotees and the spiritual master. That should not be done. Like that. Because they are working very hard on our behalf to take us back to Godhead. So we should just try to cooperate. Prabhupada says this in the Ishopanishad. Prabhupada says that the Lord only desires for the jivas to cooperate. Right? Krishna doesn't want to control us. Right? Krishna can control us. You know, if If Krishna wants to control, it's totally within his capacity to do it. You know, we can say, you know, sometimes people get on an ego trip and we call them control freaks. You know, they have to control everyone and everything all the time, right? Krishna can do that. That's within his capacity to do that. He can control everyone if he wants to. It's no big deal for him. But he doesn't want to. His desire is not to control everyone. His desire is that they cooperate with him. Right? There's a difference. Right? And sometimes people ask, you know, why doesn't Krishna take us back to Godhead? You know, if it's within his capacity to do it, why doesn't he take us all back right now? Yes, he can do that. It's not that it's not within it. We don't have to be in this material world. Krishna can just take everyone out right now and put us back in our original position. But he doesn't want that. He doesn't want to control. Krishna wants cooperation. Which means that there's a, how do you say it? Like a two-way relationship. Right? The relationship is not a one-way street. Or it's not a one-way relationship. It's not just Krishna reciprocating with us. Love means there must be a two-way reciprocation. Now, that's what prema means. Right? So therefore, Krishna wants cooperation. He wants us to show our devotion to him. Right? So we should be good followers of the spiritual master. We should be good devotees. And we should cooperate with all the other devotees. And we should be good followers of the Lord and not give him trouble by deviating. And not giving the spiritual master trouble and the devotees trouble. Because when someone leaves, right, then it takes a lot of work to get them back. A lot of work. And then the devotees have to put in so much time and so much effort to bring that person back. So we should not waste the devotees' time when they could be using that time to preach to new people and bring them into Krishna consciousness. So we should try to be good devotees if we can. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Is it a question or a comment?
It was a question.
What did you say?
What's the question?
Yeah, I was just trying to confirm. Because the origin of the gene is Mahavishnu.
Is it meaning originally?
Originally.
Technically speaking, the jivas don't have an origin. Right? Because the first thing Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is na tvibhaham jatuna samna twam ne me janati bhava. So there's never a time when the jivas did not exist. The conception that God is the creator is just a philosophical conception so that we understand who is the supreme entity, that God is supreme. That's why in the Bible, especially in those kind of scriptures, describes God as being the creator. Right? But that's just a philosophical conception, so we understand that he is supreme and we are subordinate. But factually speaking, there wasn't a creation. We weren't created, we've always existed. So Krishna. Yeah, like that. So the jivas were in the spiritual world with Krishna, or with Narayan in the Vaikuntha Lokas, or in Goloka Vrindavan. And then when they fall into the material world, they enter into the material world, and it says that they take their birth as a highly elevated demigod or as Lord Brahma when you first come into the material world. Right? This is described by Prabhupada, I think, in the 9th canto, one of the purports. So you come into the material world and you take a very high position, and then by association with the material energy, then you fall down into the material world and you take many different species of life. And then at the end of the universe's of the life of Lord Brahma, if you're still within the material world, when Lord Brahma ends, when he leaves his body, then all the universes go back into the body of Mahavishnu, and the jivas go into a state of sleep or unconsciousness for as long as they're in the body of Mahavishnu, which is, you know, 311 trillion billion years, like that, one of his inhales, like that. And then you come back out again through the body of Mahavishnu. He glances, and the jivas are glanced back into the energy, into the material energy, into the pradhan by Mahavishnu, like that. Does that
make sense? You can say he comes from Mahavishnu.
Yeah, in that sense. but not like in an original context. So, does that make sense?
Oh, very much.
Thanks
very much.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
I was reading yesterday in the past on the Lord Ramchandra, and Prabhupada says that just as an animal doesn't understand the desires of his master until he whacks him with a stick, that's somebody else that a living entity doesn't understand what Krishna wants him to tell him to, until he whacks him.
Mm.
Like the master has that hidden animal.
Mm.
So that he can understand what's required of him.
Mm.
So you see the cows in all the bazaar, they try to sort of sneak up to the sabji wala and have something to eat, and then he's got a stick there and just whacks him with it.
Mm. Yeah, they get a bit carried away when they hit them. Because in Vedic times, the cow is like the mother. So the mood is you're just supposed to, you know, move her away. Sometimes you have to be forced, sometimes you have to be forceful, but they don't treat them very respectfully. They just whack them way too hard. Any other points?
You said that you need to cooperate with Krishna. And he doesn't want to control us, but Mr. Guru told me that we should always try to be under the Krishna's wish and control the. Always be under the control of Krishna and his devotees. So I'm not able to understand that statement.
Yeah. So it means it's a willing control. That's the difference. Right? Just like Rupa Goswami gives the example of a young boy and a young girl. Right? So a young boy and a young girl are automatically attracted to each other. Right? It's just like automatic attraction, Rupa Goswami says. And Rupa Goswami says, let my attraction to Krishna be like that. Right? When a girl is 15 and a boy is 15, because Krishna is eternally 16, Radharani is eternally 15. Right? So we see in this world, when a girl is 15 and a boy is 15, the boy can only think about girl, and the girl can only think about the boy. That's all they can think, like that, like spontaneous attraction. So what happens is that the girl completely controls the boy. She completely controls him. She says to him, you know, can you pick me that flower? Or can you buy me a sweet? Or can you get me this? And the boy is controlled by the girl. But it is, he's giving that willingly. It's not forced. It's not like someone's, you know, standing there with a gun saying,
he's
go. Yeah.
He's enjoying it.
He's enjoying it. Like that. You know, it's not that, you know, someone says, go and get the sweet. You know, like that. Automatically, he just goes and gets the sweet. Like that. So that's what it means by control. You know, to be controlled by Krishna, but a willing control. Not like a forced control. Krishna doesn't want force. Krishna can force. There's no problem. Like we said, Krishna can just take everyone back to Godhead now. Everyone. All the universes, all gone. Everyone goes back to Godhead. Krishna can do it now. If he wants. But he's not going to do it. And he never does it. Because it has to be given from our side. Like that. Does it make sense?
An announcement, more or less. Joe Riley gave birth to a baby boy last night at 9 o'clock. So they're trying to work out what name they should give him.
Who's Joe Riley here, for those devotees who don't know?
Brother Bussy's wife.
Yeah, just in case someone.
Fresh Brassi said, all of my family was calling Brahma. And there was an initiation ceremony yesterday in Pune. And Jagannathan is now Jagannath Ram. Jagannath is Jamuna Leela. Jamuna Leela. Vishvesh is Vishvatna, and Arti is Ayodhyarani, and Radha Krishna is something, I forgot what Radha Krishna something, I can't remember what it is. Radha Krishna Chandra.
Hmm. Auspicious.
Yeah. Hmm. So a few births.
Krishna came and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu only 500 back, give the holy name to everyone, they can go easily to spiritual world. That is the message.
Yeah, that's the point. That's the last thing we said last night when we were talking about Lord Rama's appearance. The last thing Prabhupada says at the end of the chapter about Lord Rama in the ninth canto, and he said you can get the same benefit of being in the kingdom of Lord Rama in Kali Yuga by taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna, which is the incarnation of Krishna in the that. Interesting, because in the Chaitanya Mangala, I've been reading the Chaitanya Mangala by Lochan Das Thakur, and you know, we say that there's four incarnations for each of the ages like that, but in one sense the same incarnation came for Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga, because Krishna and Mahaprabhu are the same person, like that. So, in Lochan Das Thakur is quoting a conversation by Lord Brahma. So he says this means that actually Krishna and Mahaprabhu are the same incarnation, right? For Kali Yuga and Dwapara Yuga, it's the same incarnation in one sense. So then he says that means there's only three incarnations, because the Lord is known as Tri Yuga, so there's only three. So then he says the incarnation in the age of Kali is the holy name. That is the incarnation of the Supreme One. And by propagating the holy name and anyone absorbing in Sankirtan, then the benefit that we can get from Lord Ram's presence can be manifested.
It's interesting at the end of that chapter, because Prabhupada talks about Varnashram, establishing Varnashram. But then he doesn't give any details about that, and he just says everybody just has to chant Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm. And he says that in the last two or three purports. You know, when he talks about where the Bhagavatam talks about Ram being, you know, loving or a parental, you know, affectionate parental relationship with the rest of the citizens, because he's concerned about their welfare. And they're also affectionate to him because, you know, he's so caring about them. That's what Prabhupada says, you know, we should introduce the Varnashram system. But then he says, the Varnashram system is meant to bring us to love God, you know, to become a devotee.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, he doesn't give any more detail about the Varnashram, but he says everybody has to chant Hare Krishna, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting what he says. And of course, if you chant Hare Krishna, then that will naturally bring you to the stage of and it'll also bring us, purify us to the point where we can order society in such a way so that people can accept who they are, you know, good or dumb, and engage accordingly. Interesting.
Mm. Yeah, because he says in the Nectar of Devotion, it's in the second or third chapter.
It's not possible.
Yeah, he says just engage in devotional service at that point. But then, in TKG's diary, near the end of his pastimes, like in Vrindavan, the final pastimes, he said 50% of my mission is to create Varnashram, which I have not done yet, like that. So he says both things.
Yeah, well, the way I understand that is that, Prabhupada wanted to do it, but it had to be on the basis of purification. Which is what the Varnashram system is all about, is bringing people up through the process of purification. And since there's no other method of purification other than the chanting of Hare Krishna that's effective in this day and age, you could create the construct, if you like, but if the people are not chanting Hare Krishna, then they just go back to their degraded ways. And you see that, Brahmanas or whatever, they're Brahmanas by birth, practically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not really, purified as such. Brahma means purified as such.
Mm.
It's, a lot of devotees have wondered, how are we going to implement the Varnashram? But it seems clear to me that it will only be done when there's a degree of purification in the, if there's a culture and a purified atmosphere and purified people. So.
Mm. And then, probably on top of that, is that it can probably only be manifest within a rural environment. Within the city, you're not really going to find, Radhanath Swami was Radhanaswami was pointing this out, that within like a city temple and a city environment, like it's not really Varnashram, because there's no cows, there's no, you know, I mean, if you study the Bhagavatam, if you study the Bhagavatam, like the emphasis Prabhupada puts in the first two cantos, and even in the third canto, there's a few purports in the beginning, that he puts on cow protection. Like, it's phenomenal how important it is. Like, it's, you know, it's just, in Prabhupada says, it's like, and at the end of the purport, at the end of the third chapter of the third canto, and then Prabhupada says, success in spiritual life is based on worshipping cows, brahmanas, and practicing devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He says that is success in human life. So, you know, I remember Radhanaswami mentioning this, that, you know, it's only going to be done in a rural environment, Varnashram, what we call Varnashram system, is only given in a rural environment. In the cities, so it's really, we're just here to preach. You know, we're not really practicing.
Yeah, certainly at this stage of our careers. But not that Varnashram couldn't be implemented in a city environment, but there'd have to be a lot of changes and a lot of purification of people in general. Otherwise, at the moment, as you say, cities are just a sense gratification. There's no real other purpose. Or not for spiritual. That's for sure. Just go for a walk down Swanson Street today.
That's what Radha Prabhu is saying. Brahmana means the one who knows Brahma and the one who can preach to everyone what is Brahma. That is Brahma. Otherwise, so Kali, there are no Brahmana really. Except
by birth. By birth, there's no Brahmins. But by training and culture and purification, then Brahmins can be created. Prabhupada said his comments meant to create a class of Brahmins. So they have to be by purification. Then Snat Goswami says that bell metal gets turned into gold by a process. So people can become Brahminical. They can become Brahminical by purification. But they're not born in Kali Yuga. People are not born as Brahmins.
Everybody's. There's no Brahmins. Statement of that Prabhupada said, there are no Brahmins. Brahmins are created. Everybody's born as a Brahmin.
Yeah, Kalo Sutra Sambhava. That's. It says here that there's a feast for Jagatai Goswami's Vyasa Puja at 5 PM on Thursday. And there's a grain feast on Saturday at 6 PM. So all the devotees are invited to come.
There's Vyasa Puja celebration here.
On Thursday.
The program starts at 5.
Feast will be at 8 o'clock.
Feast will be then served.
Just a reminder to everyone. Those who do not know.
Okay. So everyone's invited to come on Thursday night for Jagatai Goswami's Vyasa Puja. Srila Prabhupada ki.